This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hi, everybody. Jay Cooper with the Sports Report for Monday, April 29, 2024, reading for the pages of the USA Today Sports section. We have the Brewers are off to a hot start as Bob Nightingale reviews the first month of Major League Baseball as in the books, and he's focused on our division rival Milwaukee team. We have, of course, the NFL had its famous draft over the weekend, and we've got some comments about that. Kentucky Derby preview, that's coming up this weekend. We also have the return of former track star making her renaissance, and we'll see what is in store, or what we hope is in store for Gabby Douglas, and make that gymnastics. I'm sorry, I said track star. Gymnastics, of course, is what I meant. But we're going to start off with some baseball news as our Reds lost 2 out of 3 over the weekend in Texas, and I know they take on San Diego later tonight. Let's start with Bob Nightingale. Brewers start hot despite rash of injuries. Milwaukee, this is by Bob Nightingale. Milwaukee Brewers owner Mark Attanasio is standing alongside the other screaming 32,000-plus fans and can't quite believe what he's seeing Friday. So he pulls out his cell phone and acts like a kid, recording the Brewers' thrilling 7-6, 11-inning win walk-off of variety over the New York Yankees at American Family Field. "I've never seen anything like this," Attanasio says. "Nobody wants to leave. Look, nobody wants to leave." Welcome to Milwaukee, where the Brewers have been baseball's little engine that could. This is a locomotive where the engine is wheezing, the hydraulics are leaking, and the wheels are rickety. But here they are, with the third best record in baseball, entering Saturday better than the LA Dodgers, the New York Yankees, and the Philadelphia Phillies. "We're trying to hold everything together with duct tape," Brewers GM Matt Arnold tells USA Today Sports. Since the Brewers were last on the national stage in October during the postseason, they lost their manager, Craig Counsell, to their hated rivals, the Chicago Cubs, traded their Cy Young winner, Corbin Burns, to the Orioles, lost their all-star closer, Devin Williams, for the first half with multiple stress fractures, and had 9 total pitchers go on the injured list. "It's been quite the rodeo," Arnold says. "No matter, they are leading the National League Central, trying to win their third division title in 4 years, and make a 6th postseason appearance in 7 years. It's amazing what they're doing," says Brewers manager Pat Murphy, who was Counsell's bench coach for 9 years. "We lose 3 of our starters from last year. We lose 3 of our new starters, so we're filling in with guys that we had no idea would even be in the big leagues. That's a challenge. But here we are, the smallest market in baseball, and we're hanging in there. It's borderline amazing." The Brewers, who had won 7 of their past 9 games entering Saturday, haven't been blown out of a game all year. They have had at least a tying run at the plate in the 9th inning in their losses and remain undefeated when leading after 8 innings despite not having Williams. "What I'm excited about is that these guys compete," Murphy says, "night after night. They've been unbelievable. And catcher William Contreras, well, he has been nothing short of incredible. The little brother of St. Louis Cardinals catcher Wilson Contreras. William had no role with Atlanta once they traded for Sean Murphy, and now is making everyone forget about how the Josh Hader trade that turned the Brewers clubhouse upside down in 2022. The Brewers acquired Contreras reliever Joel Piamps and minor league pitching prospect Justin Yeager in a three-way trade with Atlanta and the Oakland A's in December 22. The cost was speedy outfielder Estery Ruiz, one of the top prospects they acquired 4 months earlier from the San Diego Padres in the Hader trade. Fast forward, Contreras has emerged as one of the game's premier catchers and is under team control until 2028. Preamps has been invaluable in the back end of their bullpen. Ruiz was demoted and recently called up by the A's, hitting .269 with two homers and two stolen bases. And Hader has badly struggled this season after signing a 5-year, $95 million contract with the Astros. Those are the type of deals we understand that are tough to make, Arnold says. Anytime you give up good players off good teams, it's challenging. We never had any thought of a rebuild, but you have to make some difficult decisions in order to maintain a high-caliber team, hopefully for many years to come. Contreras not only is the MVP of the Brewers, but one of the finest players in the National League. He has played every single game, all but four as a catcher, hitting .356 with the 1,000 OPS and 22 RBI while guiding this pitching staff along the way. He's in the top five of eight offensive categories in the National League. The kid is a special breed, Murphy says. You don't find this breed out there. He has great instincts to the game. He wants to play every day. The pitchers love throwing to him. He doesn't have a warm and fuzziness to him to make friends and influence people. He just wants to compete and beat you every single game. Contreras, who said he felt a bit uncomfortable last year, trying to learn a new pitching staff with new teammates, says this year is completely different. He's relaxed, confident, and feels ready to be a team leader. It was a little bit hard last year, Contreras said, but I've studied a lot. We have so many new pitchers. I've got to go at their strengths and help them adjust to the big leagues. It's a challenge, but one I like. Says Arnold, he was a quiet kid when we first got him, but he's grown into his own and has such a great feel and awareness of game. He's so well-respected by players, and everybody cares about him. He's really developed into a leader on this team and is a catalyst for the success we've had. He deserves all the credit with the way he's worked on both sides of the ball and prepares our pitching staff to flourish. I can't say enough about him. He's one of the strongest players I've ever been around, honestly, and he's tough. He just never wants to come out of the lineup. The Brewers, who only twice have lost back-to-back games, know there will be rough times ahead. They have only two healthy starters from their opening day rotation in Freddie Peralta and Colin Ray. Only once has a starter pitched into the seventh inning. They're trying to piecemeal a rotation with Joe Ross, who missed the past two seasons recovering from Tommy John surgery, Bryce Wilson, who opened the season in the bullpen, and Tobias Myers, who made his major league debut Tuesday. Oh, and if they didn't have enough pitching injuries, they also are without former MVP and two-time batting champ Christian Yelich and outfielder Garrett Mitchell. It's almost like we'll have our own little trade deadline when all these kids get healthy, Arnold says. It's certainly been a test for us, but every year has its new challenges. It's hard when you're in the smallest market and there are such big differences in payroll, but no excuses. We have plenty of resources here to compete. We just have to do some unpopular things sometimes to sustain that success. And sometimes, well, a lot of the time, those decisions seem to work out just fine in Milwaukee. And we're going to jump over to horse racing. Some Kentucky Derby news. This is by Jason Frakes, F-R-A-K-E-S, with the Louisville Courier-Journal. Dateline Louisville. If you thought drawing the dreaded number 17 post position for the Kentucky Derby would phase fierceness owner Mike Rapole, think again. I was one for a million in my life, Rapole said. 0 for 44 is way better odds than 1 in a million. I'm in. That's great. Despite getting the 0 for a lifetime number 17 post, Florida Derby winner Fierceness was named the 5-2 morning line favorite during Saturday night's draw for the 150th running of the $5 million Grade 1 Kentucky Derby. In 44 tries, the number 17 post never has produced a Kentucky Derby winner. 49er came the closest, finishing second to winning colors in 1988. Since the introduction of the starting gate in 1930, the number 17 spot is the only one of the 20 that hasn't produced a Derby winner. Let's be the first of many things, said Rapole, the multi-billionaire who created and sold two beverage companies, Glacio and Body Armor, to make his fortune. I've never been afraid to try to be the first in anything I've done in life. Why would a 17 post scare me? You know? A full field of 20 plus two also eligibles was entered for the Kentucky Derby, which has a post time of approximately 6:57 p.m. and will be televised live by NBC. That's this Saturday. The winners and losers from the post position draw are as follows. Brad Cox's horses. With Catching Freedom at number 4, Just a Touch at number 8, and Encino at number 9, the Louisville trainer avoided the extreme inside and outside posts. Just a Touch and Encino both have early speed and figure to be near the front early. Just a Touch jockey Florent Giroux has already texted me that he likes the post, Cox said. Obviously, we're looking at Fierceness, number 17, and number 12, Track Phantom, from the outside of us. I don't know what the plan will be with Dornock from the one hole. They might have to be aggressive with him. Cox said the post position wasn't as important for Catching Freedom, who figures to be closing late. He'll probably be in the second half of the field going into the first turn, Cox said. Catalytic. The number 5 post has produced the most winners. 10 and the Florida Derby runner-up took the lucky spot. We can't complain about the draw, trainer Safi Joseph Jr. said. We just have to get away clean, and after that it's up to jockey Jose Ortiz to give him a good trip, and for him to run the race of his life. Losers, the favorites, along with Fierceness at number 17, number 2 betting choice Sierra Leone, 3-1, drew the undesirable number 2 spot. However, trainer Chad Brown said the number 2 spot wasn't so bad for his late-running colt. He's just a touch farther in than I wanted, but he didn't get the number 1 hole, so I'm okay with that, Brown said. With this particular horse, what I didn't want was the 19 or 20. In fact, it would have been hard for him to drop over without losing ground, significant ground, around the first turn. The last winner from the number 2 hole was affirmed back in 1978. Dornock, the Danny Gargan trainee, has plenty of early speed, but likely will have to go early from the number 1 hole. I don't think it's the kiss of death, Gargan said. There's no speed on our outside, so hopefully he'll break running and we'll put him on the front end and see how it goes. We plan on keeping his face clean. Now we'll keep it real clean. The last winner from the number 1 spot was Ferdinand in 1986. And there's a total rundown of the NFL draft, which I'm going to save you from. But this commentary by Jarrett Bell about Detroit hosting the draft is certainly relevant. Dateline Detroit. Now that is how you stage an NFL draft. The city of Detroit put its best foot forward in hosting the NFL's signature off-season event, drawing a record crowd of 275,000 people for the first round on Thursday, and broke the total record with over 700,000 in attendance for the three-day event downtown. Sure, we may have had a preview of the rabid interest in these parts as the long-suffering yet immensely passionate Lions fans fan base became central to the storyline last season of the revival of one of the NFL's oldest franchises. The draft, though, took it to a new level, which fuels a most relevant question: when will the NFL bring the draft back to Detroit? You know, we don't make predictions about that, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell said, told USA Today. You have so many interested cities and competition. In other words, despite surpassing attendance marks set by Nashville, Tennessee in 2019, the Motor City will have to get back in line to land another draft. The bidding for the draft now resembles the bids the NFL draws for awarding Super Bowls. Since the NFL moved the draft out of New York following the 2014 event, Chicago is the only city to claim the event twice, in 2015 and 2016. Beyond next year, when Green Bay will become the ninth location to host the draft, the NFL has yet to award drafts. So the earliest that Detroit could host another draft is 2026. I was with the mayor of Green Bay on Thursday, Detroit Mayor Mike Dugan told USA Today Sports, referring his counterpart Eric Gingrich. We're going to help them do it next year, and we'll go from there. Last year, Dugan was in Kansas City, Missouri for the draft. As Goodell put it, Dugan said, look at that. How are we going to do that? Well, Detroit did it even better. With the draft footprint covering a significant part of downtown, the draft theater stage was constructed in Campus Martius Park, while the league's theme venue, the Draft Experience, was situated near the Detroit riverfront. With road closures, the corridor allowed for ample foot traffic that accessed entertainment venues, exhibits, bars, restaurants, and pop-up stores. Bottom line, Detroit raised the bar for staging the event. In addition to the contingent from Green Bay, there were representatives from nine cities in Detroit observing the NFL's operations as they consider the potential for bidding on drafts. It's a strong alternative for cities that would be hard-pressed to win a bid to host a Super Bowl. I think the beauty of this is that every community does it in their own style, and then they raise the bar, Goodell said. In addition to the fans, Goodell said he was most impressed with the teamwork of the public-private partnership that existed in the 6 years since Detroit began its pursuit of the event. I think it's really demonstrated the great things that are happening here in Detroit, Goodell said. Really proud to be here. During the 1990s, Dugan was chairman of the stadium authority that led to the construction of Ford Field, the Lions' home stadium, and Comerica Park, home of MLB's Tigers. We talked about these kinds of days, Dugan said, with the Pistons and the Red Wings housed at Little Caesars Arena, a short walk from Comerica Park and Ford Field. Dugan notes that Detroit is the only city in the nation with all four major sports franchises with homes downtown. The Lions came back from Pontiac, and the Pistons returned from suburban Auburn Hills. The next big sporting event in Detroit is ticketed for 2027, when the Final Four, the Men's College Basketball Championship, will be held at Ford Field. Dugan said that the city, which currently has an estimated 5,000 hotel rooms downtown, will be better positioned to bid on events as ground will be broken soon on a hotel adjacent to the convention center. The opening night of the draft, though, allowed the mayor to bask. I just kept looking back at the crowd, said Dugan. It was special. That much can be said about the draft experience in more ways than one. On top of the buzz in downtown Detroit with the attendance figures, the NFL draft again pulled in the viewers. With broadcasts on ABC, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, the NFL Network, and digital channels, the league reported its highest first-round viewership since 2021, with an average audience of 12 million, which was up 6% from the first round last year. That's a higher viewership than the 2023 NBA Finals, the recent Masters Tournament, and the 2023 World Series. And even better for the NFL, people watched and they showed up on the streets of Motor City. And speaking of the draft, no HBCU players picked in the draft, marking second shutout in 4 years. For the second time in 4 years, no prospects from a historically black college or university, HBCU, heard his name during the NFL draft as the 2024 edition wrapped up Saturday. The shutout also happened in 2021. And the overall lack of HBCU draftees in recent years prompted the creation of initiatives such as the HBCU Legacy Bowl, sponsored by the Black College Hall of Fame, for draft-eligible prospects, and the NFL-backed HBCU Combine. Following the 2021 draft, then-Jackson State head coach Deion Sanders, now at Colorado, sounded off on social media, writing, quote, "I witnessed a multitude of kids that we played against that were more than qualified to be drafted. My prayers are that this won't ever happen again," end quote. In 2022, four players from HBCUs were taken. That number decreased to one last year, as Jackson State's Isaiah Bolden, the cornerback, was taken by the Patriots with one of the final selections, 245th overall. Including the lone player selected in 2020, HBCUs have accounted for eight draftees in the past five drafts. Virginia State cornerback Willie Reed and Howard University's Enim Dankwa, a 6'8" left tackle, were considered the most likely HBCU prospects to be drafted this year. Well, hopefully those standout players playing in HBCU universities and colleges will have a chance to be a free agent, unsigned free agent, and latch on with one of the NFL teams. 2024 Mr. Irrelevant tied safety Jalen Key. This short story by Sydney Henderson. The nickname bestowed upon the final player selected in each NFL draft has grown in significance. Mr. Irrelevant has become a whole lot more relevant in recent years. Following the success of quarterback Brock Purdy, who led the San Francisco 49ers to Super Bowl 58, after being drafted out of Iowa State with the 262nd pick of the 2022 NFL draft, Purdy has claimed many firsts as Mr. Irrelevant, including the first quarterback of Super Bowl team. Jalen Key will join the Mr. Irrelevant club that Purdy has helped re-energize. The New York Jets selected Key, a 6'2", 210-pound safety out of Alabama, with the final pick of the 2024 draft in the seventh round, 257 overall. The pick was announced by Melanie Salata Fitch, daughter of Mr. Irrelevant founder Paul Salata. Key's 24 spent the first 4 years of his college career at the University of Alabama at Birmingham, where he racked up 78 total tackles, 58 solo and 20 assisted, 3 interceptions and 2 forced fumbles in 24 games. He transferred to Alabama in 2023 and finished the season with 60 total tackles, 35 solo and 25 assisted, a pass deflection and an interception in 12 games. Deion Sanders vows Colorado will earn 24 bowl bid. Dateline Boulder, Colorado. Colorado football coach Deion Sanders put on a short, wet display of football talent Saturday at Folsom Field. It only lasted about an hour. The announced crowd of 28,000 plus also included plenty of no-shows who didn't want to sit through the cold and rain at the second annual intra-squad spring game since his hiring. But the performance was enough for Sanders to confirm what he already knew. The team is good enough to go to a bowl game this year. We're going to get it, he said. He renewed his promise before the game when he addressed the poncho-wearing crowd to express his gratitude for braving the weather. He also called out Peggy Copham, Colorado's 99-year-old superfan. God bless all of you, he told the crowd. I would be remiss not to start our season without acknowledging the beautiful Miss Peggy. Where are you, girl? Where's Peggy? Peggy, wherever you are, we love you. We appreciate you, and our goal is we're going to get you to a bowl game, lady. Copham was keeping dry far above the field where the football action below included a running clock and only two quarters of scrimmage play. Using an unconventional scoring system, the offense then beat the defense 29-24. Sanders' quarterback son, Shador Sanders, threw for the first touchdown of the game, a 19-yard pass to a new transfer teammate he helped recruit to the team, LaJonte Wester from Florida Atlantic. The progress that we made is another caliber of player that's playing, a player that truly expects to go to the next level, meaning the NFL, said Sanders. Shador only played three series and completed 10 of 14 passes with the touchdown. The kid can flat out play, Deion Sanders said. Shador was asked by a reporter afterward if he was disappointed that the NFL's Denver Broncos drafted a quarterback in the first round Thursday, Bo Nix of Oregon. Some local fans were hoping the Broncos would hold off on drafting a quarterback until next year, when Shador is expected to be a top pick. Yeah, man, I don't know what's next now, Shador Sanders said about the Broncos' move. He was joking. And folks, that's all we have time for this half hour. This is Jay Cooper saying thanks for listening to USA Today Sports, and I'll talk to you next Monday.